Father David, you're the patriarchal vicar for the Hebrew-speaking Catholic community here in Israel. Tell us just briefly, first of all, about this community. Who are these people?
In our present reality, it's not one community. I am patriarchal vicar for a small community of people who are mostly Israeli citizens, who have been here since the 1940s and 50s, who came into the country with the massive migrations of Jews as Catholic members of Jewish families, usually because of intermarriage, and a few converts here and there, but very few. Today, this community is growing by leaps and bounds. If we change a little bit the definition of the community and we think now of all those tens of thousands of Catholics who are living within the Jewish Hebrew-speaking Israeli milieu. And these tens of thousands, of course, are not Israeli citizens, but migrant workers and asylum seekers.
Many of them are living in very difficult conditions, aren't they?
Well, in this entire population, which lives on the margins in great poverty, there is the elite, and those are the migrant workers who are legal and can work and therefore can gather together some money in order to send back to their families. And then we have the bottom, the real precarious situations of those who have fled into the country, usually across the Sinai Peninsula, and have come in thinking that they would be recognized as refugees. Israel does not give the status of refugee to almost anybody, and so they are asylum seekers without the rights that are generally accredited to people who are refugees. Most of them are Africans. We have, at the present time, just over 50,000 of these people here. The vast majority, around 35,000, are Eritreans, with still many thousands of Sudanese here, although there were massive deportations in 2012.
Now, tell us something about the conditions that these people are living in. You've been very concerned about them, haven't you?
Well, as church, we need to be concerned because these are our brothers and sisters. And in the church, there are no citizens and non-citizens. We are all citizens in the church, and we all have an equal right to the care and love of the church. So the first way this came to the attention of the church was that we had to organize the religious life of these people, setting up religious praying communities in many places where there is no church, because really they live within Jewish society rather than within traditional Christian society, which tends to be Palestinian Arab. And there, of course, there is a long, ancient, rooted presence. But we're dealing with people who live in the Jewish towns and cities predominantly. Dealing with them on the religious level brought us into the whole field of religious education as these people started to have children here, born here, growing up here, schooled here in a very secular Jewish Hebrew-speaking culture where there is very little presence of the church or Christianity. And so the great struggle in order that they would keep their Christian identity. That brought us into the nitty-gritty of their daily life. And here we're living through very dramatic times. The massive influx of African asylum seekers began in 2007. At that time, Israel did not want to recognize individuals, but rather recognized groups of people coming from countries that posed a danger to the lives of their citizens, like Eritrea, like Sudan. What is now happening, and this is the drama that is going on as we speak, is that hundreds of young men, for the moment it's those that are not married, are being picked up on the streets, their visas are not being renewed, and they are being deported to a very big camp in the middle of the Negev Desert. The Israelis insist this is not a prison, and we have visited and seen that they can go in and they can go out. But the problem is that it's a far, far away from any city. They have to be counted three times a day. They have to sleep there. And for the meantime, the conditions are appalling. There is overcrowdedness. The food is terrible. There is not enough medical care. And the worst of all is that there's nothing to do. So we have at this present time 2,300 young African men closed into one place with nothing to do. So drugs and alcohol are having a feast on the bodies of these young men. And we are hoping that the Israeli legal system will come in and help to resolve this and declare this proceeding not acceptable.
There's also been a hardening of attitudes, hasn't there, within Israeli society towards these migrant workers.
Once again, let's make it clear it's not the migrant workers, it's the asylum seekers. There has been a hardening of language. It began with language. These people do not have the right to work. That's part of the problem. And not having the right to work means that they are very easily exploited by Israeli employers who employ them because you don't need to guarantee them any rights. So that's one part of the situation. The other is that some of the young men who are not able to work but have to live and have to eat and sometimes have to provide for families, it means naturally there's a growth of crime. And there have been a few criminal acts that were violent. Many, many criminal acts are committed in the areas in which they live, which are crime-ridden, poor areas. But of course, when it was an African, that was immediately plummeted into the newspapers, and that created a large feeling of resentment among the very poor, underprivileged Jewish populations living in these areas, and of course inciters coming from outside driven by racism. And so there's been a hardening of language that has sometimes led to outbreaks of violence and a popular lobby demanding that these people be put out of here. So yes, there's been a hardening of attitudes, and although these people, for the most part, are very law-abiding, trying to put 2 cents together in order to make a living, they are meeting with more and more racism.
What kind of atmosphere have you found in preparation for this papal visit among these migrant communities?
The migrant communities are very aware of who the Pope is, who's coming to visit them. They know very well that Pope Francis has a very big heart for migrants. They remember, and in fact we commemorated it here as well, his visit to Lampedusa. They remember his reaction to the suffering. They too are living the drama, not only of having what's going on in Israel, but also of human trafficking that goes on when they're on their way to Israel. And they know that the Pope, Pope Francis, Pope Benedict before him, have been very, very in solidarity with the suffering of these people. So there is great excitement. We were able, of course, to get some tickets for people to be present. So there will be Asians and Africans waiting to welcome the Pope.
They'll be lining the route. They'll be taking part.
No, they will be in the square. Once again, we had to insist, and of course the church knows this language and accepts this logic, that they are not foreigners. They are part of the local church, and their presence is recognized by the granting of a number of hundreds of tickets for the Asian and Africans, South Americans and Eastern Europeans who are here long-term working here and already are really part and parcel of the church. We had the wonderful build-up to the visit of Pope Francis with the inauguration of a first pastoral center in South Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is a Jewish city, and so there was no church presence until very recently, and then a very, very temporary church presence where we rented a place here and rented a place there. We now have our own center. And in that center, of course, the posters of the papal visit are everywhere. Great excitement. There will be hundreds of people just from that center coming.
So they'll be at the Mass in Bethlehem?
Yes. Yes, they'll be making the journey, leaving very early in the morning, taking time off from their work and making a real sacrifice. But they are very enthusiastic to go. And if there is any feeling among them, it is one of a little bit of resentment that more of them can't go.
What kind of message are they expecting, do you think, from Pope Francis on this occasion?
I think that they're aware that Pope Francis is coming with a whole series of messages that don't directly touch upon their reality. I think that they want to see him, they want to feel his embrace, they want to hear a message of faith that can help them struggle on. I think this is particularly true of those who are facing within a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, the dire reality of being deported into the camp in the Negev. And I think that here it's the job of the church to really glean from Pope Francis's message to the world, from the Holy Land, what is the special message of solidarity with those that suffer and those that are the new slaves of our society, a phrase that he likes to use often.
On a different subject, as a Hebrew speaker, what can you tell us about the way the press here in Israel has been perhaps looking ahead to this visit, or hasn't it?
The press is very taken with the visit, okay, and that for two different reasons, one positive and one very, very scary and negative. The positive is that Pope Francis has captured the imagination of the Jewish people and has captured the imagination of all those interested in what's going on in the world. There has been an enormous amount of interest in the way that he expresses himself and the way that he is a religious person. This openness, this man of dialogue, this man who can listen and respond to the necessities of the modern world have really caught the imagination of the people, and a lot of articles have been published about him even before he was supposed to come, and now that he's coming, great interest. The negativity is that we do have our own crazy extremists who are profoundly anti-Christian, and a lot of publicity has been given to the fact that Pope Francis is coming to pray in the cenacle, which is just over the tomb of David, and there is a struggle between these extremist Jews and, in fact, the Israeli government, it's not even with the church, regarding the fact that we as Christians would like to have regular prayer in that holy place. We are not asking for the holy place to be given to us, but we are asking that our right be recognized to pray there. And the extremist Jews, and some of the ways that they have been expressing themselves as the Pope's visit draws closer, is really terrifying.
We've seen attacks, haven't we? And we've seen graffiti and death threats.
Yes. And what is the most terrifying of all is the language that is being cultivated, how to speak about Christians. The rabbi of Rehovot this morning on the radio said a number of times in the same interview with absolute clarity, Christians are idolaters. If they pray on the second floor of the building, we cannot pray there. They are turning the whole place into a church and pushing us out. Woe to the government of Israel that gives in to them. Now, this kind of discourse is scary for Christians here because it's exactly the teaching of contempt that minorities have suffered from, and perhaps most of all Jews have suffered from when Christians spoke in that way. So we need to be very much on our guard, watch how this develops, and work together with those in Israeli society who see that this is an enormous threat, not just to Christians, but to the very nature of what Israeli society is about.
It could set back Jewish-Christian dialogue by many, many decades, couldn't it?
Well, that's only assuming that there is one Jewish people. What we realize today is that goes when we talk with Muslims and that goes when we talk with Jews, that we have every interest in building up strong coalitions with people who share our values, Jewish and Muslims, in the various societies in which we live together. And these people are actually bigger enemies of the Jews than they are of ours, because what the damage that they are doing to the state of Israel and to Israeli society is devastating for Jews who do want an open, democratic and liberal society.
In this context, what message do you think the Pope can bring here in this very tense situation?
I think that the message that the Pope will bring is one, his person. How to be a religious person in the world. A person who can be very strongly a man of faith, strong convictions, and yet remain open, a man who listens, a man sensitive to the other. I think the fact he's coming with a rabbi and a Muslim teacher is an important changing of our image. The fact that he's coming to meet with divided Christian brothers, these are all attempts, I think, to change our imagination, to realize how much is possible. We close ourselves off into our little partisan warring factions, and our imagination is totally suffocated. And I think that the message that the Pope will bring is, open yourselves, accept your brother, listen to him, let him listen to you, share, and you will find that ways open up in front of you that you had never imagined would be possible.